Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Crypto Economy Quick Read. All right, crew, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. I've got one today. Another from Stop and Decrypt. I will actually link to, obviously, to his Medium page and Twitter. Stop and Decrypt does a lot of really great, thorough, and lengthy works, which is why I had a number of people tell me that I was going to have to read this one, because it is rather long, as most of his work is. But I will link to the other articles that I have read on this. And if you enjoy this one, I think you guys will, please do not forget to go give him a round of applause on medium.com, because this is his content, not mine, even though I will drop some commentary at the end. But for now, we will be jumping into Stop and Decrypt's Medium article, ASIC resistance is nothing but a blockchain buzzword. And changing Bitcoin's proof of work is a futile endeavor. Introduction. In the wake of the recent and most significant, or insignificant, push to change Bitcoin's proof of work, I thought it would be a good opportunity to score some more brownie points from the community by laying it to rest. I'm going to discuss the more broader topic of hardware specialization, or ASIC resistance, the technical and logical flaws in trying to resist specialized hardware, some history around this, and then I'll touch on what I hope to be a short-lived and fishy motion for a proof-of-work algorithm change that nobody wants besides 2.5 people. Since the inception of the first alternative cryptocurrency, there has been a need for them to differentiate themselves from Bitcoin, or else it becomes obvious to the bystander, those your coin is appealing to, that it's just a copy. They're an alternative for a reason. You don't want them to think it's just a copy, because then they dismiss it for what it really is. A copy. What's Derpcoin? Oh, it's just like Bitcoin. We copied it. Why would I use it if everyone else is using Bitcoin? It has a better name? That's definitely not a good reason, so we need to replace that really bad reply with something better. Something that seems noteworthy or convincing, not just a new appearance. I won't be explaining all of these, but here's some of the common ones that are used. Faster confirmation times, Litecoin, larger blocks, Bcash, environmentally friendly, Ethereum, better privacy, Monero, ASIC resistant. So what is ASIC resistance? It's mining that you can do. How does that sound? Does it sound good? It's mining designed to stop people from having an, quote, unfair share of the hash power, so you can join in on the fun and make some money too. Furthermore, it will keep our blockchain, quote, more decentralized. We know you don't know what that really means, but it's going to work, we promise. It's all nonsense, and the reason why is pretty straightforward, but to cover all angles, I'm going to give you the whole rundown. Index. 1. General overview. Hashing and mining. Hash the block, check the hash like a lottery ticket. General purpose processing. Your computer's CPU is general purpose. Application specific processing. An ASIC is one variant of this. And intentional complexity, unintentional consequences. 2. Specialization resistance strategies. Different but the same. Alternative but equitable algorithms. Memory intensive algorithms, uses different parts of a computer. External oracles, periodically changed by the developers and community. Programmed alternation, periodically changed by the code. 3. Where it all began and why it's still around. A blast from the past, a little bit of history. When will it end? A grim or grin future. 4. Late-stage mining requires low barriers to entry. Major League Mining, the end game. No lemons, no lemonade. 5. Changing Bitcoin's proof of work solves nothing. Temporary relief for never-ending false alarms. Hard forks intrinsically lack consensus, with few exceptions. And 6. Conclusion. Hashing, mining, and pocket knives versus scissors. Hashing and mining. Hashing is the act of scrambling data. You take anything you want, put it into a box, and out comes random zeros and ones. There's a few functions this provides, but generally it lets you keep the input a secret while sharing the output. Hashing algorithms are a specific set of instructions used to generate a hash. They could be as simple as multiplying by 5 and dividing by 2. The caveat here is this is completely reversible. You can just multiply by 2 and then divide by 5, and computers can do this guesswork extremely fast. If you want the input to remain a secret, you need something stronger and irreversible. We could add more steps, but it's the kind of steps that matter. Remember those number pattern recognition tests in high school? 2, 6, 12, 20, 30, 42, 56, blank, blank. Describe the pattern. Computers are also really good at those, no matter how complex you make them. If you're going to standardize a hashing algorithm for everyone to use, you need to do more if you want the inputs to remain a secret. Making a process irreversible requires taking the numbers out of the realm of math and, quote, playing with them a lot. Which brings us to Bitcoin's hashing algorithm, the SHA-256 hashing algorithm. There's a lot of material out there that explains what this is, but I'd rather leave that up to you and skip straight to demonstrating it. Go to this website and enter the following. You'll see the outputs are the same. Graphic. He just shows that there's a website where you can simply input data and it will immediately produce a SHA-256 hash of that data. And in his messages for the example, you simply can see that the message is block data 1, and block data 2, and that each has an individual hash. And if you type it in yourself after going to that website, you'll notice you'll get the exact same result. End graphic. See how the outputs are all different? Now that you get the gist, keep adding random values after block data until the output hash begins with AAA. That is all mining is. It's just guesswork via trial and error. You can find more extensive detail on what I described above in this video, and you can watch someone perform the SHA-256 algorithm by hand here. General purpose processing. Running SHA-256 on a string of data is a very simple process for a computer. The CPU in the computer you're reading this from can do it because CPUs are built like a multi-tool pocket knife, capable of performing a lot of different kinds of requests. Try and imagine each of these blue dots as a 0 or a 1, and the entire machine is a CPU. Begin graphic. The graphic is an animation of an absolutely giant and elaborate Rube Goldberg machine with hundreds of little blue dots moving through each of the different steps simultaneously. I could probably spend half a day trying to describe all the little pieces that are going on in this, and could sit here and just watch it for 30 minutes, continually picking out little things that I had not seen before. But I will not. Instead, we will continue. End graphic. Taking the block data and hashing it doesn't require all that machinery, only specific parts. Your CPU can do it, but the rest of that space and energy is wasted, leaving a lot of room for improvement. So let's create something more specific. Application-specific processing. Graphic. Instead of the entire elaborate Rube Goldberg machine of activity that was going on in the previous graphic, we have now isolated just a single closed-loop element that only does a single action. end graphic. ASIC stands for Application-Specific Integrated Circuit. It's a type of hardware specialization, but it's not the only kind. This is one of the causes for confusion on this subject because it's a common misunderstanding. It's similar to calling all electronic music techno. Techno is just a single genre of electronic music, and ASICs are just a single kind of hardware specialization. Conversely, ASIC resistance is just a single kind of hardware specialization resistance. So from here on out, I won't be using the ASIC misnomer. I'll be addressing it for what it is. Please ignore the title of this article. It was only meant to lure you in with your own misunderstandings. I'm inclined to believe that after reading up to this point and seeing the picture below, you'll get the idea. Application-specific hardware is designed to do one thing and one thing well. When you get rid of all the useless bells and whistles of a CPU, you end up with much more efficient and specialized hardware. Graphic. And now we have just that single element that was pulled from the elaborate and variant Rube Goldberg machine before, and we have copied it into a grid of 64 different units that are all performing the exact same task over and over again. End graphic. Intentional complexity. Complexity is the essence of the resistance, but it doesn't always come in the same form. In contrast to a simple algorithm like the one above, the general goal of specialization resistance is to make it difficult to design a piece of hardware so that people are forced to use CPUs or GPUs. Logic is as follows. 1. If it's hard to specialize, it can't be or won't be worth specializing, forcing mining to be done on generic hardware. 2. Acquiring hordes of generic hardware will be more expensive for miners looking to expand their venture. 3. If mining operations expand slower, smaller ventures won't be outcompeted, and people at home can play along as well. 4. This will keep mining decentralized. Drawing from the GIF I used above, if SHA-256 only required that small aspect of the CPU's computational abilities, then a specialization-resistant algorithm would look something like this. Begin graphic. Instead of just having one single element repeat over and over, he has basically grabbed a specific line or path down through the Rube Goldberg machine that has 7 or 8 different steps in it and is slightly more complicated than the single specific element that was taken out before. End graphic. The issue with this, and with the logic above, is that at some point, if your coin is successful enough, it will be worth designing specialized hardware for it. Then you end up in a situation where the production supply for that specialized hardware is very centralized, but more on that later. Graphic. And here he simply shows that, regardless of the fact that this might be 7 or 8 slightly more complicated steps than the specific one we have pulled out of the Rube Goldberg machine before, its slightly higher variance does not change the fact that we can still just make a grid of exactly this series of steps. End graphic. 2. Specialization resistance strategies. Without getting into the technical mumbo-jumbo, I'd like to go over the different types of resistance strategies that are commonly advertised. Different, but the same. This one's the easiest of the bunch because it explains itself. Some algorithms use the same, quote, parts of a CPU-GPU as SHA-256, offering no real difference in computational difficulty or cost to manufacture. Some other algorithms use multiple parts of the CPU, some of which may be more costly to create specific hardware for, but again, this falls short in the end. The only real purpose of these is to say, quote, they don't make ASICs for these, so you can feel fine using your computer at home. Well, that's great and all until your coin starts becoming valuable and a company does decide to make dedicated hardware. Litecoin tried this, and now they have specialized mining hardware. The following article does a wonderful job elaborating on this and other stuff I'm discussing here. Link. Here he links to the State of Cryptocurrency Mining, which is actually also one that we have read on this podcast. If you were interested, it is a very great article. You can find it on Medium, and I will link to it as well. or you can listen to it on episode 69 of this podcast. End link. Memory-intensive algorithms. I don't think this deserves its own section, but it's so commonly thrown around, I need to mention it. Else someone may comment saying, "You only talked about CPUs, what about things that use different parts of the computer like RAM?" Motherboards connect different kinds of hardware together, yes, so not all kinds of computing take place within the CPU. Some algorithms are designed to require more RAM to generate more hashes. All this does is prevent graphic cards from being used to mine. It does not prevent anyone from coming along and making dedicated hardware for it, and that's where it falls short. At best, it's useful as an emergency hard fork algorithm, because no one has made dedicated hardware for this kind yet. It falls short of utility in almost all of the cases. The in-development coin Grin, making use of Mimblewimble privacy technology, uses this kind of algorithm, and companies will develop hardware if it ever becomes a viable cryptocurrency, or perceived and valued as such. External Oracle. This is effectively, quote, same but different, except there's more than one algorithm, and they change at the leisure of the developers and or the community. These can be planned ahead of time in intervals, where the new algorithm isn't decided until the last moment, or it could just be spur of the moment whenever they feel like mining centralization has become worrying. Monero is like this. Having started with a typical resistant algorithm, Bitmain ended up developing specialized hardware for it anyway. So, quote, they decided to spontaneously fork and change the algorithm. This is, of course, fine, but the most important distinction here is this is not decentralized at all, whatsoever, no matter what anyone tries to tell you. Anyone can be bought, blackmailed, or worse, and any sort of, quote, voting mechanism can and will be gamed if the coin becomes valuable enough. Furthermore, this can't go on forever. The network can't keep shutting down old nodes just to hard fork to a new algorithm. You need a robust and immutable set of code moving forward so infrastructure can be built on top of the network that won't get disabled by some spontaneous hard fork out of desperation. Programmed alternation. This one takes the selection process and automates it. It doesn't matter how it automates it, all you need to know is that there's a set of algorithms it cycles through. All of these algorithms can have specialized hardware designed for it, and again, the only thing preventing this from happening is the price of the coin. If it becomes valuable enough, it will happen. There's also the likelihood of general-purpose hashing units being developed that are semi-specialized, which can immediately destroy the initial intent of the alternation without having full-blown specialized hardware developed for it yet. Ravencoin aims to do this by alternating between 16 different algorithms. Like all the other methods described above, the end result is just a system that is more difficult to specialize, not impossible. 3. Where it all began and why it's still around. A blast from the past. Begin excerpt from Bitcoin Talk forums. Announce Tenebrix, a CPU-friendly, GPU-hostile cryptocurrency. We heard that you like mining, so we put a miner on your miner so you can mine while you mine. Note, try changing -S in the miner batch to 3, 5, or 7. Experiment which is best for you. Official website, tenebrix.org. Hello, everybody. Allow me to introduce you Tenebrix, a cryptocurrency we, mostly Art Force, but I contributed the name, some minor tweaks in the logo, as well as Windows Portability Suite and cool Genesis motto, winky face, have created to provide the community with a cryptocurrency with solid GPU resistance. It implements a proof-of-work scheme based on Script, a cryptographic construct specifically designed to resist creation of efficient GPU, FPGA, and even ASIC implementations. You can find more about Script and how it can improve your stamina, masculine appeal, and performance here. Tenebrix is intended not only to become the first and the best of CPU-specific cryptocurrencies, but remain so in the future. That's exactly where the Tenebrix Protection Fund will go. That, usability GUI bounties, fixes. There's some text here that is much too small to see, and then closes with a smiley face. End excerpt. Quote, intended to be the first, the best, and remain so in the future. End quote. Well, it was the first one, Tenebrix. If you've heard of it, you probably don't need to even read this section. The premise was simple. Mining is getting harder, and it's unfair to those without expensive graphics cards. So let's make something that resists against this. A lot of people like to toss around the word scam in this ecosystem, but I think it can be a bit off-putting because nobody had a clue back then, and if anybody tries to tell you otherwise, well, make your own judgment. I was mining Litecoin in 2013, made like 20 bucks. I'm not a scammer, and neither was Charlie when he announced it only 15 days after Tenebrix announced theirs. It was just an interesting concept at the time when nobody knew where any of this was going to go. Excerpt. This is actually a really long excerpt, so I am just going to sum up and then give the specific points that he has highlighted in this. So this was the launch of Litecoin, a light version of Bitcoin. Litecoin's the result of some of us who joined together on IRC in an effort to create a real alternative currency similar to Bitcoin. We wanted to make a coin that's silver to Bitcoin's gold. Various alternative currencies have come and gone, brought some innovation, but they all had problems. And then it goes through a list, and the two that are highlighted are Geistgeld, which user LOL Cust, the user who announced Tenebrix in the previous post, pre-mined 7.7 million coins. 15-second block time is probably a bit extreme, alive but limping at 15 gigahashes per second. Then Tenebrix. LOL Cust pre-mined 7.7 million coins. CPU proof of work using script is very innovative, price doing fairly well on BTCE.com. Alive at 0.003 gigahashes per second. Skip down a bit and titled Proof of Work. We really liked Tenebrix's script proof of work. Using script allows one to mine Litecoin while also mining Bitcoin. We humbly offer a big thanks to Artforce for the implementation. And then there's a last paragraph that simply talks about the Litecoin pre-mine, which was just the Genesis block plus the first two to confirm that the Genesis is valid and have a starting place, but realizing the need to release it in a fair manner. End excerpt. Of course, the issue here is not any particular coin, but how this trend ended up playing out. While one project may have created out of genuine interest, others were certainly scams. Then there was everything in between. This gradient of legitimacy, along with the exponential growth of this space, is important because it helps people understand why we are still seeing this concept of resistance continue to propagate today. If there is no hard line between what is a scam and what isn't, then there's no way to definitively move forward and away from the confusion. Some of these coins are still around, with Litecoin being the perfect example. Litecoin's, quote, success is not because of its proof-of-work algorithm, but rather because of how closely it's managed to mirror Bitcoin, from its development process down to its community and their ideology. This image below was meant to mock another one that floated around, but there's some truth in it if you look closely. Except LTC did have 150 pre-mined coins, which amounted to literally nothing until very recently. Begin graphic. A graphic is just a comparison of Bitcoin, Bitcoin Cash, Ethereum, Monero, and Litecoin with a bunch of checked X or question mark boxes covering the total supply will always be 21 million, total supply schedule will never change, will always be non-inflationary, wasn't a clone of another ledger, featured in Star Wars Attack of the Clones, etc., etc. If you would like to see the entire list of attributes and the comparison of the individual coins, just follow the link in the show notes and the Twitter post. End graphic. This is a testament to the gradient of legitimacy, which Bitcoin maximalists tend to outright dismiss in favor of Bitcoin's, quote, immaculate conception. It's fine to think like that, and I'm one of them, but I wasn't always one of them. Like most people, there's an eventual realization that occurs. And like most people, there are things that hold us back from making that mental switch. If you took all of these people and plotted them, we'd get another gradient, a gradient of mindset. You can't expect everyone to instantly change their minds at the same time, and so long as there exists a subset of people that think there is utility in alternative algorithms, then the idea is going to propagate, especially to the new waves of people entering this space. This doesn't make the entire group of people that support them scammers. although there are many scammers that exist among them. And boy, do they scam. Excerpt from BitcoinTalk.org announcing Darkcoin. Release date 11 p.m. Eastern, 18th of January 2014. Bold, all caps, no pre-mine. Specifications, little list of attributes, highlighted CPU only mining. Coin information, some other aims to be, Darkcoin aims to be privacy-centric cryptographic currency, so on and so forth. Highlight at the bottom, ASICs will be much more difficult to make for these algorithms and will take years. Next, archive, BitcoinTalk.org forums. Within the very first hour, over 500,000 coins were mined. Two, within 8 hours, over 1.5 million coins were mined, which is most of the Instamine. On the matter of the Instamine itself, to focus on the amount of the Instamine and the subsequent disposition of the coins is to ignore a whole host of extremely deceptive and arguably fraudulent practices that surrounded it. 3. That Evan misled people into thinking the launch would not happen for days, and specifically, definitely, not in hours, then it happened in a few hours, late at night in the U.S. and during the early morning hours in Europe. Considering the over 500,000 coins mined in the very first hour alone, the effect of this ambush was enormous. 4. That the stated reason for delaying the launch for days was to do more testing and fix bugs. Yet, when the coin was launched, it still had a serious error. Why was the rushed ambush launch done in this manner? 5. That Evan withheld information about the purpose, features, and goals of the coin development until after the Instamine was complete. It was absolutely impossible for you to have any reason to mine this coin unless your strategy was to mine 100% of new coins that were launched. You just happened to stumble into it. You were friends with Evan, or you were Evan. In effect, it turns the Instamine into a pre-mine, because the coins were mined before the coin was properly announced. 6. That various changes have been made to rewards, etc. multiple times, always in the direction of reducing, restricting, locking up supply to the benefit of existing holders. The latest version of this is masternode payments, which look very much like a HYIP, a form of financial fraud which attracts new investors by offering high yields to the benefit of early investors. 7. Renaming the coin has been proposed by Evan and then later implemented to reduce attention on Instamine, the previous withholding of information, the manipulation, and the misleading and deceptive statements that occurred in connection with the previous name. End excerpt. Dash, formerly Darkcoin fanboys, will deny the issue with this, but it's partly why they rebranded, with the other reason being they are no longer pretending to be a privacy coin. Dark equals private. You can see these scams are multifaceted in that they use a CPU-only algorithm as a one of many selling points to get people interested. But they then go and pre-instamine millions of coins without having to worry about competition before releasing it to everyone else. Bitcoin Talk is littered with sketchy coin launches just like this, so it makes sense to see one of them become a, quote, major altcoin. Doesn't make it any more legitimate than the others, but most people just don't know better. When will it end? Begin graphic. Coin market cap, cryptocurrencies, 1,737. Markets, 12,468. Followed by a chart of the number of cryptocurrencies listed on coinmarketcap.com as of August 1st, 2018, and it simply shows an ever-increasing line of the number of cryptocurrencies listed. End graphic. Cryptocurrencies are not disappearing anytime soon, and it's likely there will always be minority chains that try to achieve the spotlight. While I can't predict when the trend will subside, the amount of coins in existence doubled over the last year alone. A good portion of them are ICOs. But, within the context of this article, more notably is the introduction of new blockchain security methods. The most known of the bunch is proof of stake, but then there's delegated proof of stake, proof of storage, proof of authority, proof of work with masternodes, proof of endorsement, question, and directed acyclic graphs. Graphic. In 10 years, we won't have blockchains. Enter the DAG. The closest thing I've seen so far that matches my imagined path is a directed acyclic graph. End graphic. The list keeps growing, and the waves of blockchain hype are slowly moving away from proof of work, particularly because it's portrayed as a waste of energy. More on that below. Yet there are still new coins in development that market themselves as ASIC resistant. As mentioned already, Ravencoin launched recently, and it advertises itself as resistant by having the protocol switch between 16 different algorithms. Then there's Grin, which is in development, that actually goes about this in a very interesting way. It's not trying to be resistant, it's just trying to be new by using a memory-intensive proof-of-work algorithm that will be easy to mass manufacture in the future to avoid GPU farms, coming in instantly and dominating the market, allowing it to grow organically the way Bitcoin did. While I don't think altcoins will disappear entirely anytime soon, the outlook for most of them, medium term, is grim. I find it unlikely that ASIC resistance will continue to be a major selling point in the future, but likely that the hype death cycle of altcoins will continue via other means of attraction. Begin graphic. Data visualization. 118 coins plotted over time. This is why HODL altcoin indexes don't work. And it shows the price comparison or price multiplier of Bitcoin versus 118 other lines, and it just shows a clear and obvious trend of all the altcoins going down, with maybe just a few exceptions against the price of Bitcoin. End graphic. 4. Late-stage mining requires low barriers to entry. In the first two sections, I alluded to the underlying issue with trying to resist specialized hardware, and I'd hope the following conclusion has already been made. You can't stop it. Instead of endlessly trying to stop something that you can't, an alternative approach would be to look at the situation rationally and find a new way to think about it. As the title of this section suggests, I want to discuss the importance of having a low barrier to entry into the mining market, particularly in the endgame scenario, where a blockchain has become massively adopted. Ultimately, this is the only thing that matters, because what's the point in creating a temporarily semi-useful blockchain with no positive outlook to its future because only a few select entities can create the required hardware? Major League Mining. Mining in its current state is chaotic, dirty, sort of disruptible, and there are too many blockchains to go around. Verge was 51% attacked, and it won't be the last. Hash power security, in the form of energy expenditure, is slowly starting to prove its necessity. Everyone has their opinion, but many refuse to think 50 or 100 years into the future when it becomes fundamentally important to have a good proof-of-work algorithm. If they do consider the future, they reference what we see today and claim it'll have the same issues but worse. Putting the mining skeptics aside, who prefer alternative options like proof of stake, the pro-mining critics typically point at geographical and manufacturer centralization as growing concerns and will toss around fast and loose solutions, like arbitrarily changing the proof of work to something, quote, better. Begin Twitter post by Cobra. It's an honor to be involved in the POWX.org project. They're building new proof-of-work hardware for Bitcoin based on ASPICS, application-specific photonic integrated circuits, a form of computing that uses photons. Bitmain monopoly is irrelevant in this field! Exclamation point. End Twitter post. Bitmain does not have a monopoly on mining. They have a large stake in hash power, but it's not a monopoly, and they're losing more of that stake every day to more energy-efficient hardware like Halong's new Dragon Mint T1 and other manufacturers that are starting to produce their own ASICs outside of China, like the Japanese internet giant GMO. And I wouldn't be surprised if others are engaging in this development in private as well, just like Halong was until the announcement, so you shouldn't be either. Graphic. Just shows the mining revenue spent on energy per kilowatt hour of the Dragon Mint T1, Antminer S9, Average and then the Antminer S7 devices, and just shows that while the Dragon Mint T1 is the most efficient, the Antminer S9 and Average hardware follow very close behind, and they all show the same gradual trend, with the S7 being a laggard of much higher cost. Second chart, comparing the real Bitcoin energy consumption index of different of those same four different hardwares on a number of different stats and attributes, power consumption, energy consumption, percentage of world's energy consumption, percentage of world's electricity, electricity cost, energy efficiency, and finally a list of 13 different miner models, their comparative terahash per second, their efficiency, their watts, and their joules per gigahash ratings. If you would like to see those comparison and those statistics, I encourage you to go to the article and check them out. They're about two-thirds the way down the page. End graphic. Mining's intrinsic properties imply a never-ending race to be the most energy efficient, and the end result will be mining on renewable energy, which will encourage farms to grow outside of China and in close proximity of those renewable resources. We're already seeing this migration play out without renewable energy in locations where it's just cheaper to cool off the hardware by being located in a colder climate. It becomes even easier to do this when you can get the hardware manufactured locally or even do it yourself. So let's take a step back and think, which is more difficult to manufacture? An advanced piece of hardware like a modern central processing unit or a very specific and simple-to-produce chip that performs a very basic hashing algorithm? If you don't think renewable energy is going to dominate in the future, then you should just check out this publication by the International Energy Agency. I'll just let some of the data do the talking, but add in that in just 2017 alone, renewable energy additions were 40 times the amount of energy Bitcoin mining used in the same year. We're going to be in such a surplus of energy that latency, transporting it, will become the bottleneck for energy demand growth. So you think these power companies are going to stand by and just let all that extra energy production go to waste? They're going to be producing clean energy at rates faster than they can export it. So where do you think all of that energy is going to eventually go? Graphic. Electricity capacity additions by fuel. In 2016, measured in gigawatts. Coal, roughly a little over 80 gigawatts. Solar PV, somewhere in the mid-70s. Wind, right around 50. Gas, right around 40. And renewables, over 160 gigawatts. Wind and solar together will represent more than 80% of global renewable capacity growth in the next 5 years. By 2022, Denmark is expected to be the world leader, with 70% of its electricity generation coming from variable renewables. VRE share in annual electricity generation. Percentage of total generation. This chart merely compares a bunch of different countries, 12, I believe, with percentage of the total generation of electricity, and the shares that were PV and wind in 2016, and the additional shares of PV in 2022, and the additional shares of wind in 2022, as expected at current rates. Again, if you would like to check that out, just follow the link in the show notes. End graphic. Headline. Lemonade stand startups crippled by new regulations. Probably the last headline you want to see as a lemonade stand entrepreneur when you wake up in the morning. In preparation for this day, you created a list of things that could potentially affect your new lemonade business. Tariffs on lemon imports. Costly to import lemons from other countries. Lemon farming has new regulations, reducing supply, increasing costs. Lemon DNA patents are created. Others can't farm those kinds of lemons. And major lemon farm burns down, reducing supply, increasing costs. Wouldn't it be nice if you could just grow lemons in your own backyard or rent your neighbor's yard to grow lemons for just this season and then rent someone else's yard next season if they have better rates? Would you have this freedom if only a limited set of your neighbors had the right kind of soil that could grow lemon trees? Hopefully you see where I'm going with this. When it comes to designing and fabricating hardware to process the proof-of-work algorithm being used in Bitcoin, the last thing you want to see is 50 different companies trying to get the same single fabrication company to create hardware for them. Anyone can do research, but development ends with mass production, even if it's just a single production run. The more complicated the hardware design is that you need created, the less likely you are to find a variety of chip manufacturers that can do this for you. And the ones that do exist may be production bottlenecked or in some sort of binding contract. Do you know why mining originally centralized in China? China has less regulations on hardware design, happened to have cheaper electricity, or it was easier to fraudulently get cheaper electricity, and the hardware was relatively easy to produce. Fundamentally, though, it was because of the cheap electricity where they wanted to set up a mining facility, and a low cost, or distance, to transport from the manufacturer to the mining facility. As renewable energy starts becoming more prominent, what do you think is a better scenario over the long term? 1. Complicated hardware designs that only a select few manufacturers can produce, and mining centralizes in distance around these locations? Or 2. Simple hardware designs that many manufacturers can produce, and mining facilities can be reasonably spread out among the globe wherever it's convenient to use renewable energy sources. This kind of necessary diversity, distribution, and decentralization in hardware production is promoted by a proof-of-work algorithm that is the opposite of complicated, the opposite of resistant, and not prone to getting changed. We went over how new startups are coming online and expanding at this very moment, and that there will be more to come, but what would happen if they were stopped in their tracks? What would happen if you had, let's say, 10 manufacturers, but only 2 of them have been producing long enough to see a profit, and then suddenly all of their hardware is rendered obsolete? Would they all be able to come back from that loss? I'd bet 8 of them won't. So what's the point in crippling all of them except the largest ones who can recover from it and just start making new hardware? 10 manufacturers versus 2. Which sounds more decentralized? If you were a startup that was looking into mining but you made no initial investment yet, what would you do after such a thing occurred? Would you be more likely or less likely to keep moving forward knowing that one day all your equipment will become obsolete? Do you really want people being scared or hesitant to invest in mining? How would this not result in monopolization of the mining ecosystem? And why, again, do you think a proof-of-work change would help the ecosystem? 5. Changing Bitcoin's proof-of-work solves nothing. Now that I have successfully lured you this far into my ramblings, let's go over some recent talks about trying to change Bitcoin's proof-of-work and why it will never work. If you don't know the difference between hard and soft forks, here's a primer that should be enough for this section. Temporary relief for never-ending false alarms. Begin Twitter excerpts. All are written by Luke Dash Jr. June 29th, replying to Nirvana Dev and The One Brand 7. ASICs are fine. Bitmain has no advantage over anyone else with a good proof of work. If we eventually end up in the same situation again, that's not terrible. We can just change again until we have a long-term solution. It's still better to solve it for the short term than do nothing. June 28th, responding to Bash Co. and Mr. Hodel. The speculation is the claim that Bitmain would rapidly regain their monopoly. There's a chance of that, admittedly, but even in that worst-case scenario, we just end up back where we are now and can repeat the proof-of-work change again. June 25th, replying to Alistair N. Munro. Note also that even if we never need to change proof-of-work algorithm again, we will probably need some other hard fork eventually, So we wouldn't necessarily gain anything from a permanent solution versus a temporary one, even if it were possible to know which the new algorithm is. June 18th, responding to S.H. Mondicles. Nah. 1. The goal is many manufacturers who can compete against each other. 2. The reality that we are prepared to proof-of-work change again creates a strong incentive for manufacturers to play nice. That's not benevolence, it's properly ordered incentives. Smiley face. May 19th, replying to SKWP and Vega 113T. 1. We should pick an algorithm that has a low barrier of entry for others. 2. Bitmain can learn that the community will react defensively and change proof of work, thus incentivizing them not to do it again, even if they can. 3. Worst case scenario, it happens again, and we change again. May 19th, responding to Spiros Elliott. ASICs aren't the problem. We just need to ensure new ASICs aren't centralized. And if they are, yes, we can change proof of work again and again until they aren't. No harm in that. Responding to Damn Cool and Budion. If the problem comes back, we can solve it again. It's not like proof of work change is a one-time trick, and knowing this creates the incentive we need for miners not to recreate the problem. March 8th, responding to Edward Kirstein and Ethereum Weekly. We need to be willing to change proof of work again and again at any time someone compromises it. Then the incentive is clear that compromising the proof of work becomes worthless. The point in all of this was to show that the quote-unquote solution is to just keep changing the proof of work every time we have some subjective idea that it's being monopolized or that it is too centrally controlled with one entity. End Twitter posts. This isn't an attack on Luke, it's just that Luke is the most vocal developer that is pushing for a change, and openly makes it clear that it would have to change again at some point in the future, quote, until a better solution is found. This directly implies that Bitcoin doesn't work as is, which I fundamentally disagree with for all the reasons I've spoken about up until this point. Bitcoin proof-of-work change advocates are only temporarily relieved by their own solution and have nothing to offer that brings finality to the never-ending proof-of-work change dilemma their logic puts themselves in. Fortunately, Bitcoin's security is not dependent on our ability to hard-fork the proof-of-work, and its security only grows as more hash power comes online. This is effectively the external oracle variant from the second section, where the network's security is completely dependent on the community's ability to come to consensus and change the proof of work when we all, quote, feel like it's necessary. Remember that thing about gradients of people? Yeah, then we need to come to full consensus every time we fork the proof of work? Hard forks intrinsically lack consensus, with few exceptions. Below are excerpts from two Bitcoin Dev mailing list emails from Anthony Towns. The emails discuss upgrading Bitcoin's signature scheme from ECDSA to Schnorr. This upgrade, like most to follow, is set to be a soft fork, one of the benefits of the SegWit soft fork, that allows all the old functionality to continue existing, while providing the option and incentive to switch to using the new feature. This allows the network of nodes to undergo a sort of plastic upgrade so that your node continues to function and not get kicked off, even if you don't upgrade. Additionally, it's a trivial upgrade because it doesn't break any of the underlying incentives the network assumes. The suggestion below is to include within the soft fork a 5-year, quote, timer, at which point the network will hard fork in the upgrade that we would have by then already had for 5 years. The hard fork would then remove additional complexity in the code that was required with the soft fork to keep the network together. Excerpt 10. Hard fork automatic upgrade of P2PKH to be spendable via SegWit. Making existing P2PK or P2PKH outputs spendable via Schnorr with interactive signature aggregation would likely be a big win for people with old UTXOs without any decrease in security, especially if done a significant time after those features were supported for new outputs. I think it's worth considering bundling a hard fork upgrade something like In approximately 5 years after V2 scripts are activated, existing P2PKH, P2PK UTXOs, either matching the pre-SegWit templates or version 0 SegWit P2WPKH, can be spent via a V2 aggregated signature, but not via Taproot. Core will maintain a config setting that allows users to prevent that hard fork from activating via user-activated soft fork up until the next release after activation, probably with user-activated soft fork enforced minor signaling that the hard fork will not go ahead. End excerpt. The logic surrounding this hard fork proposal is actually quite reasonable. The soft fork upgrade isn't expected to be contentious in the slightest, it doesn't break anything, doesn't cut your own node off the network, and it only adds in a new feature. The hard fork that is being proposed, tacked onto the end of it, makes a single assumption that within 5 years most people will have upgraded already anyway. I polled Twitter a while back, and these were the anecdotal results. Begin tweet. Would you support this kind of conditional hard fork? Don't vote if you don't read the tweet below. 55% say yes, 45% say no, with 76 votes. End tweet. I firmly consider this to be an extremely reasonable hard fork, as far as hard forks go, but I would never support it with results like these. If it's split 50-50 for such a non-contestable change just because it includes a hard fork, can you imagine ever reaching consensus on a proof-of-work hard fork with an assortment of drawbacks and unknowns that may negatively affect Bitcoin's network incentives as a result? Excerpt from Twitter. At Emperor, July 18th. What does it take to do then? A new BIP? What are the obstacles? At Luke-Jr. Consensus from the community. Second Twitter excerpt. Jameson Lopp, at Lopp, July 18th. The claim that Bitcoin will never hard fork is ridiculous. At the very least, a hard fork must occur before 2038. Otherwise, it becomes impossible for new blocks to be added to the chain because nodes will reject them as being created too far in the past. Post Wikipedia article. Cobra, response. That hard fork will include a proof-of-work change. J. Ratcliffe. No, it won't. Cobra. Yes, it will. Encircling will, won't, and will. At Stop and Decrypt has drawn out to the side LOL. Response by Nomadic. You and Luke-Jr. want proof-of-work change. Seemingly no one else in the entire industry agrees. How will you reach consensus? It may make sense when BCH has greater than 51% of hash rate from BTC. Hashtag bitch please. Again, this fork already happened and exists as BTG. Luke-Jr. BTG is an altcoin, and no, most people seem to agree, just not everyone yet. Nomadic. Any fork without consensus is an altcoin. This is the result of your proof-of-work change. Luke-Jr. No, because my proof-of-work change is only with consensus. End Twitter excerpt. Unless Bitcoin's immediate and obvious death is the only alternative, hard forks are likely to always be contestable, and as such, will always lack consensus. I don't agree with the need for a proof-of-work change. Most people I engage with don't agree that one is necessary, and there's really only a select few, if not a single core developer, who's been pushing for it. I think it's great that people think differently in this space, but consensus is never going to arrive on this subject, primarily because it solves nothing and only resets the board. 6. Conclusion. To wrap things up, let's briefly summarize my arguments. 1. Hardware specialization resistance is futile. 2. The, quote, success of altcoins are not reliant on resistance. 3. Proof-of-work algorithms need to be easy to manufacture. 4. New altcoins are swimming upstream and must apply 1, 2, and 3. 5. Changing a coin's proof of work does nothing for it long term. 6. mining will be running on 100% clean energy in the future. 7. Bitcoin mining is not ideally decentralized yet, but it's certainly improving. 8. Hard forks require predominant consensus, if not impending doom. And 9. Bitcoin will never change its proof of work unless a life-threatening vulnerability is found, because the current proof of work works. And there we have it. That will conclude Stop and Decrypt's another of his excellent articles titled ASIC Resistance is Nothing But a Blockchain Buzzword. I definitely, if you have not read it yet or heard it, check out the article that he linked to towards the beginning. It's on blog.cia.com. And like I said, it's episode 69 of this podcast. It's a really good article. And has a lot of details, and it is from a mining manufacturer. It has a very unique perspective and goes into a lot of details about really who is punished by a proof-of-work change, and completely backs up everything that Stop and Decrypt lays out in this article. And a couple of the main points that I think that I have been thinking more and more about on this topic as I kind of read and run into this on occasion. One, I don't see any support for it at all. Luke Dash Jr. and Cobra are literally the only two people I have ever seen mention it, and it is immediately followed by an entire string of comments where everybody's just like, this is stupid. Why do you keep talking about this? You are just wasting everybody's time. There was a quote that, if you're a startup and looking into mining, but you made no initial investment yet, what would you do after such a thing occurred? Referring to seeing a proof of work change hit the market. And I don't think people realize what an important market dynamic, market and infrastructure maturity is in order to maintain decentralization. Like, just like he said, he gave the example of the 10 and 2 different companies. You've got 10 companies. Two of them have established long enough and been there long enough to run a significant profit, while 8 are still in the production phase or just recently released into the market and still dealing with getting back a lot of sunk cost in such a huge manufacturing endeavor. And Who is possibly going to just let all of that cost and progress be deleted and reset and then just start over from scratch when the incumbents are the only ones helped by that situation, because they're the only ones with the profit to actually turn over their manufacturing and start the whole process over? Everybody else is running at a giant loss, or at least a small loss, and now has the added uncertainty of having no idea if this thing is going to stay consistent. How long is it going to take me to get my product to market versus how long is it going to be before Bitmain is probably, or you know, whatever those two incumbents are, is going to be ahead of the game and have far more capital to get this job done quicker. And if that happens and they beat me to market, well, they're going to be seen as another huge problem. They're going to have 60%, 70% of the mining market. The problem that caused the proof of work hard fork this time around, how the hell do I know I'm going to make it to market and sustain a profit before everybody just decides we're going to do this all over again? And the fact that Luke Dash Jr. just keeps saying again and again that, oh, we'll just do it again. Oh, it's okay. We'll just do it again. If it gets bad again, well, we're just in the same boat and we'll do it again. Like, there's no way in the world that that's good for an underlying market of security hardware. Like, that's what we're talking about. You want it to actually mature and grow out. Like, we're in such an early stage where things change so quickly that, I mean, think about it. There was the Avalon miner there. I mean, there's been multiple other companies that were actually huge players in this for short spans of time, and then we're replaced. We've already gone through this specifically because we haven't had a proof of work change. Bitmain is not going to be the top game indefinitely. They're going to see competition. They are seeing competition, and the space is maturing and expanding very quickly. Halong mining in particular was a huge benefit because one of the biggest problems is, and this is another major point that Stop and Decrypt talks about, is the simplicity of the mining algorithm to make sure that anybody has low barriers to entry to coming in, manufacturing hardware. They have consistency and predictability in the fact that that hardware is going to be there when they are done manufacturing, and that they have open competition in producing their own hardware for that algorithm, which is something that Halong and I think Blockstream had a part in this. I can't remember exactly how this played out. There was an there's an episode specifically on this, and I read it. What was that one? But it's about the BDPL, the Blockchain Defensive Patent License, and it is just fascinating. That what it allowed them to do was they purchased the rights to the ASIC, the patent, the ASIC patent, and then offered it up for anyone else, like doing mining equipment and operating in the blockchain space, on the condition that they have to offer up their own patents in return. So what it allows is, or what it creates is essentially an incentive system where nobody is holding on to a monopolistic patent. Because the ASIC patent is so important to efficient hardware, they are going to have competitive hardware. The only thing they can do is use the ASIC patent, which is open for them to use, as long as they release all of their associated patents. So that defensive patent license was actually, a huge jump or move forward in solving that problem and reducing the barriers to entry and essentially enforcing through a mutual agreement the openness and competitiveness in the mining and hardware manufacturing markets. I don't think it's an end game solution. I'm sure there will still be challenges and jurisdictions that really make this a pain in the ass, but it's a huge step in the right direction and far better than what we had 2 years ago. Again, if all of this stuff is changing, we lose that progress. As soon as we change proof of work, like now somebody can grab a new patent on whatever new proof of work algorithm we have involved. It reverses one of the huge impacts that we've already had in decentralizing this industry and lowering the barriers to entry. And going back, the basic underlying principles of all this, or elements that I think are just undeniable, is we're never going to get consensus on this. People don't want it. I don't want it. I run a node. You're not going to have my consensus. And if they just fork to another altcoin, I'm not going to use Bitcoin Gold 2 or whatever the hell their proof of work algorithm change is. Literally, unless Bitcoin is dying or the algorithm itself has been destroyed mathematically for its security sake, what possible reason would I have to undo the maturity of the mining infrastructure market that is inevitably, as long as the barriers are low, as long as the algorithm is simple, as long as the jurisdictions are widespread, and as long as we have innovations like the defensive patent license that disallows people to gain monopoly rights on certain types of hardware, and we get things like the Better Hash Protocol to ensure that mining pools are not central points of failure in regards to the control of what can be mined by people cooperating in a pool. I mean, there's so many different things that have come about specifically because proof of work has been consistent. We lose all of that as soon as we think that we're just going to hard fork randomly. And we couldn't even get one. We could not even get a hard fork on slightly bigger blocks. The fact that anybody thinks we're going to be able to do this for proof of work change, I think, is just silly. And it's leading credence to a bunch of altcoins that have no benefit, that have just tried to distinguish themselves by, again, using blockchain buzzwords. So I really pretty much agree with this entire article. From what I have read and what I know, is that I don't see any benefit, and the idea that we're going to achieve consensus on this topic is summed up in really well in Stop and Decrypt's little side note of LOL. Just laugh out loud. Shit's not just not going to happen. Eventually, I'm sure this will come back up. But this pretty much hits the nail on the head and lays out what I think is the only sensible argument. And unless there is some detrimental vulnerability or information come to light, I don't see how a proof of work change is useful at all. And I want to see what happens when we have 15, 20 years in market maturity and open licensing and defensive patents and sustained low barriers to entry, where it gets to the point where the hardware is so mature and the ASIC development is so mature that any new improvements are so incremental that just a minor shift in the electricity cost negates the new hardware. Well, that will allow the market to expand, new manufacturers to enter the space, and completely destroys the market dominance of the major players because their hardware is no longer subject to a constant next model with 10%, 20% efficiency gains. Eventually, it will happen that it gets so efficient that there's just not huge advancements left until, you know, maybe we have some breakthrough in hardware technology and we kind of go through this whole process again. But regardless, I think the only route is to keep the proof of work algorithm consistent, so that we can mature the hardware, figure out how to distribute and create market solutions to a consistent environment, which is kind of the same thought process around the consensus rules in general. Keep them consistent and we can solve them with the market. If we don't keep them consistent, we just constantly have these political infights that go nowhere. We fork the project and nobody can get consistency in the rules or the monetary policy or the restrictions of this network. So one market solution that works today might be completely meaningless next year because we don't know what the rules are going to be. We don't know what the algorithm is going to be. We don't know what the block size is going to be, et cetera, et cetera. Predictability is one of the major key factors to security, in my opinion. It's exactly why government is such a disaster in the markets is you have no idea what the regulation is going to be this year versus 3 years down the road. So you start building all this infrastructure and designing a business around certain rules, and then you have this enormous tens of millions of dollars worth of cost because they wrote some $3,000 or 3,000-page bill that completely changes what you can do, what you can say to the customer, how you package your products, and you have to hire 1,500 compliance officers across all kinds of different institutions just to read the damn thing and see what it means and how does it apply, and it's contradictory 100 different ways and everybody's confused and they're hiring the legal industry goes up by 20% in capital drain on the economy because everybody's scared to death they're going to get sued just because they don't know something on page 1842 of this new overreaching bill that the next president might drum up a whole bunch of campaign about and change to something completely different with another 4,000 pages to go through. It's such a huge drain. The lack of predictability is such a cost on the market, and I think a proof of work change is analogous to that. It's ruining all the progress we've already made. And I think I've gone on long enough. I think I hit my points. And honestly, Stopping Decrypt did a pretty solid argument through and through. This was a really long one, but I hope you guys enjoyed it. I did as well. Do not forget to go clap for that article on Medium. I will be sure to link to it in the show notes and the Twitter post and tag him as well. I will link to episode 69 for the blog.cia.com article about the state of cryptocurrency mining if you would like to listen to that, or of course go to that article and applaud it as well. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at the Crypto Economy and on Where else am I? Oh, Medium. On Medium as well. Don't forget to follow or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes. And check out all the other great episodes we've got. There's so many of these topics that we have hit in the past and done different perspectives on. So, feel free to go through the whole feed and see. There might be some great stuff in the past that you've not hit yet or have not seen. None of this is really time dependent. There are only a few things that I've covered that I think are specifically like time dependent news items. Most of this stuff is just general discussion and theory around the technology and its history. So I encourage you to go back and check out some of the past episodes. I'm sure there's a lot of great stuff that you can find to listen to. If you would like to support the show to keep these coming, as I intend to have this going as long as I can afford to, that would be absolutely wonderful. I appreciate everybody who has donated so far. Thank you so much. I will have a Bitcoin donation address in the Twitter post and in the show notes. And of course, if you have not gotten your hardware wallet, your Trezor wallet, please do so through my affiliate link. It will be no extra cost to you, and you'll send a couple of bucks my way while securing all of your best cryptocurrency on one of the best hardware wallets that you can get. So check that out, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this lengthy and thorough episode on ASIC resistance, and I will catch you all tomorrow with another episode of the Crypto Economy Podcast. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.